everyone, and welcome to episode 8 for 2019 of Refs Roundup. It's great to be back in the studio, as always, to chat about the weekend's games and what's been happening in the world of refereeing. And a very lovely welcome to my favourite NRL referee and my favourite husband, Gavin Badger. Hello, Gavin.
Hey, Case. How are you going?
Going all right.
That's good.
How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad.
All right, let's talk to the people. How was your weekend? And what did you like out of the weekend's footy?
Weekend was enjoyable. Another trip to beautiful Townsville in far north Queensland. So weather's always beautiful up there at this time of year, so that's a bonus. And, yeah, pretty competitive game of footy up there as well with the Titans and the Cowboys. So got out of that one and then come back home and was fortunate enough to spend some time out at the new Bankwest Stadium and watch the New South Wales Rugby League Junior Representative Grand Finals. And that was an amazing day of rugby league, from the first game, which is the Tasha Gale Cup, which is the women's under-18s, through to the Harold Matts, which is the 16, men's 16s, and the SG Ball, which is the 18s. The games were outstanding and the refereeing was really good as well. And I think the fact that they all played at that stadium made everyone lift, you know, whether it be players, referees, and just the feeling. And the day itself was a great day. Although I had to leave Townsville at 5:30 a.m. to get back in time for it all, it was a very enjoyable day. And I didn't fall asleep, so it must have been pretty good.
So, taking your full-time NRL referees hat off and putting your New South Wales Rugby League Junior Representative coach hat on, Saturday was a big day for you. And I know when we're talking, you're talking a bit about, how proud you feel of these kids coming through the system as referees, and to see how some of them have progressed, and to see them on what is a big stage. It's a big step in the development of referees, in the pathway to get one of those grand finals. And if any of our listeners are on our social media pages, you would have seen Badge doing the phone calls to the referees last week to tell them about those games, and would have heard sort of the emotion in that. Just talk a bit about how that feels as a coach to get to that end of the season, because it's a bit different to the coach of a team where I guess you go into the season and based on your win-loss record and then winning through the semi-finals, you get to the grand final. Sort of regardless of what your squad does, someone's going to be there grand final day. So talk through that.
Yeah, and it's a development squad. So we have, I think we're about 45 referees from various districts across Sydney and a few outer fringe areas. So they come in and we start training in November. So it's a fairly long pre-season for a 9-week competition. So we train all the way through Christmas, and then the comp starts in February. So then we have 9 weeks of competition and 4 weeks of final series. So, you know, for the amount of effort that these guys put in compared to the short competition, it's fairly, it's really hard to get one of those grand finals. Because I look at it and I say, and a big thing I say to these referees is, it's not about who's the best referee at the end of the day for those. It's who's the most consistent over those 9 weeks. So, because it might take one poor performance out of the nine, then you sort of cost yourself when you've been the best referee all year. So it can be unfortunate and quite brutal like that. But the big thing for me out of this is, like you said, I don't get wins and losses every week, but I win all the time because I get to see the development of young athletes turn into, better athletes or even better people. The big part of being part of this program is that we also want to develop you off field as well. So it's around your nutrition and your health and how you train. So you look at the squad that I have with 45, and if I'm fortunate, two or three of those guys will go on to referee NRL. That's sort of the reality of it all.
And that's pretty similar to if you looked at a Harold Matthews squad or an SG Ball squad. Out of all the kids that they've got in their train-on squad into whoever plays week in, week out for those 9 rounds, same thing, a coach might have 1, 2, 3, if they're lucky, who go on to play in the NRL.
Yeah, and it's very similar. So the big part of our process is that we want the young adults that come into our squad to leave better than they came in, and that's around the quality of the people that we bring in, the quality of our coaching staff. I'm very fortunate to have Alan Shortle, Gavin Reynolds, who both, fairly recently retired NRL referees and at what stages were current NRL referees when they were coaching the squad, and Paul Holland, who, 1,000 touchlines in the NRL. I don't want to say a number because I don't have it in front of me, but a guy that was around for a long time, as well respected in the game. So to have those guys to be able to mould these next batch of hopefully NRL referees coming through, I'm blessed as a coach to have those guys around me, and I'm quite blessed with the commitment and attitude of the squad itself as well.
Yeah, it's been great to see you have that opportunity to coach that squad and sort of see the highs and lows that you go through as a coach.
There's some tough weeks.
Yeah, I bet. NRL games this weekend, there was a few through big wins for a few teams. Your game up in Townsville against the Cowboys and Titans, how was that from a refereeing point of view in terms of that we're getting into some cooler weather now, but we go up there and, you know, it's a hotter, you know, hotter temperature and we always say is a fast track, but you had two Queensland teams there. What was the style of football like?
Yeah, it was a bit weird as well because the crowd numbers were a little bit down up there Friday afternoon. You know, the average of travel for Cowboys fans is generally around 2.5 hours to come in to watch their game. So, you know, on a Friday afternoon or Friday, you know, early evening on a Friday, it sort of drops a couple of thousand there maybe. So the atmosphere is a little bit different than a normal Cowboys game, which is, you know, quite exciting. So that has a little bit of impact on the players as well. The heat wasn't too bad. We had a really nice breeze. It was actually, it was quite nice to referee in. And like I said, for this time of year, the players would have really appreciated that. The footy, we had two teams that were, you know, really needing a victory. So I think they played a bit cautious early. You know, it was a bit, you know. And then once they got into the groove, we had a really tight game with, you know, some pretty good footy played. So I think, you know, for the Cowboys, they got a win and that sort of kicks their season back into gear. And for the Titans, they weren't that far off. So I think there were some good signs there for them as well. Yeah, so the next sort of thing I want to go through is like your weekend. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah?
Where are you leading to here?
We look at, you know, this week, yeah, In this, what we look at is, oh, sorry, I'm just a bit lost for a minute. I sort of lost my train of thought there for a minute.
Couldn't tell with you stumbling over those words.
Yeah, no worries. We sort of will head towards the GPS data. No? Where you want to go, Case?
The thing that above the GPS data. That's okay. We'll go to GPS data, Gavin, if you'd like to speak about GPS data. We had a few regular names pop up in our GPS data in round 8. That'd be familiar to most people who have listened to us in the past. So marathon runner this week was Phil Henderson at 11.7 kilometres as the assist referee in the Warriors and Newcastle game. So once again, like we said, Phil's won this award a number of times, but the predominant thing that we're seeing is that the marathon runner is going to the assist referee in games, which we've spoken about in the past. That role of the assist ref is quite physically taxing. We've spoken about before that when two referees first came in, it was sort of touted as being a way to stop the fatigue within referees, but
yeah,
it's sort of not really worked out that way. We actually run quite a longer distance. And if you look at that game, Warriors and Newcastle, which Phil racked up that 11.7 kilometres, Newcastle had a 91% completion rate, which is just outstanding. And then you compare that to the Warriors at 75%, which is, you know, solid. You know, I'm sure they would have liked it to be better. It only looks quite low compared to that 91%. But when you have both teams have good completion rate, it's always going to add to the total for the assist referee.
Yeah, definitely. And, well, more ball in play means more distance you're going to have to run, doesn't it? We don't have a lot of downtime. So it does show that, you know, when the completion rates are a lot higher, we run a bit further.
A lot more, yeah. And then the same person won both the Gazelle of the Week and our Urgency Award, both in the same role as a touch judge in the Canberra versus Penrith game out at Wagga, you know, which is another testament to the good tracks that are out in our regional grounds.
We were just talking about that, weren't we? The couple of games, a bit of a sidetrack here, a couple of the games that we have taken away to regional areas, the grounds have been outstanding. The facilities and the surface itself has been, you know, on par, if not better, than a lot of NRL surfaces.
Yeah. So, both of these awards this week went to my little mate, Drew Ultram.
I like it when you call him your little mate. I'm sure
he's
doesn't.
The only person that I can say that is shorter than me, or at least my height. So he hit the high Axel D-cell points 101 times as the touch judge in that match. And he hit 29 kilometres an hour in that game, which are both, really... really good figures. Anytime someone gets over 100 clicks in that urgency award is very impressive. And we've said before, a lot of times that can be dependent on the type of game, how many breaks there are, change of possession, stuff like that. And scoreline can definitely impact that.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it's good to see, you know, the younger sort of guys in our squad and the emerging guys coming through that are winning these awards. And it shows that they're putting in effort week in, week out to get those awards. We'll move on from that. And I just want to have a quick chat around you, around pretty exciting time for you this week. The NRL, you know, as referees, our goal is to referee first grade, obviously, but the way for that pathway is that, you know, we toil and we work our way through lower grades and then hopefully get that phone call that says, you know, from whoever's the boss at the time that says, you know, we're going to offer you a full-time contract. And you become, you know, you go from working hard and training in the mornings and training at night to becoming a full-time professional athlete. You got that phone call this week, so exciting times for you. Just want to sort of just give a little bit of insight what that means to you and then going forward how that's going to help your progression and development as a full-time referee.
Yeah, it's probably the best phone call I've ever received. Or it wasn't not phone call, but best message I ever received, because thankfully I was actually really thankful that I got to receive that news face to face from Bernie Sutton.
Better than the day we got married?
Oh, well and truly.
Yeah, probably.
Not even a competition. last week on Wednesday, I heard the news, which was very, very unusual. So usually full-time contracts are sort of handed out around October, November, sort of at the end of one season, heading into the off-season, the pre-season for the following year. And for a range of different factors, including a enterprise bargaining agreement that the NRL referees were going through with the NRL, those contracts weren't able to be handed out at that time. And so we'd sort of gotten to this time of the year where, well, I don't know how others felt, who were sort of on that cusp of people who were, you know, obviously hoping to achieve that status of being full-time. But I sort of felt like the moment for this year had passed and had sort of resigned in my head to the fact that it may come around next year, that I would be more aiming for to receive a contract next year. Well, that's what I'd be working towards.
Sorry to butter, you probably did it the best way. You got to miss out on a whole preseason.
Yeah. The
toughest part of the year.
Myself, Todd Smith from Manly, originally from Manly Referees and was in the New South Wales squad, and Belinda Sleeman, originally from Rockhampton Referees and in the Queensland State squad, all received full-time contracts. So on Wednesday, I was in at the NRL just as part of my work role, my normal job, and bumped into Bernie Sutton, and he said, do you have time to have a chat? We'll grab a meeting room. And I actually texted you and I said, oh, yeah, sure, I'm not in no rush to sort of take off. And I actually texted you saying, Bernie wants to have a chat. I don't know what it's about. I'm worried that maybe we said something wrong in the podcast last week.
Maybe I'm in trouble for something, because usually we are in trouble for something.
So I'd actually text you straight away, sort of thinking.
I started racking
my brain, thinking, what did we speak about on the podcast that possibly I could, you know, get in trouble for, or that he might suggest, oh, you know, maybe don't say this, or this didn't sound right, or could you explain this incident in this different way in the future or something. So it was definitely the last thing on my mind that he wanted to have a chat about offering me a full-time contract. But, he sat down, asked how things were. I just said, you know, business as usual. And he said, oh, and what is that? And, you know, just went through what was happening at work. And he said, well, what would you like to be doing for work? And I just sort of rolled my eyes at him and said, Bernie, you know what I want to be doing for work. And he said, well, what if we had a way to change that? I'd like to offer you a full-time role. And I just dropped my head on the desk in front of me and swore a couple of times.
So we should have filmed this. This is what we should have filmed.
And, just thanked him for everything that he'd sort of done for me over the years. He was the first coach that I had when I came into the NRL system.
Bernie was the coach for the emerging squad when I first came in part-time.
Yeah, when I first came in part-time. And, you know, I've always said he was the best coach that I'd had in terms of, you know, he's very dedicated. He puts in a lot of effort into his role, into what he does. I really appreciate that type of coaching, someone who's invested in their, you know, in their athletes and really cares about their role.
I think you're pretty good too, Birds, if
anything. Yeah, so that was just fantastic, and I've just been on sort of on a high all week, and so then that was Wednesday afternoon, and then Thursday had my first day in there. So usually on a Thursday I would be up at 5 a.m. to do about an hour bike session, come into work for, you know, 8 hours, sit in the car for an hour, work for 8 hours, sit in the car for an hour home, and then go do a weight set, and then, you know, be home at, you know, in time for kickoff of Thursday night football, watch the football, go to bed, and, you know, sort of do it all again the next day. But
so how was your Thursday? So Casey's first day as a full-time referee was Thursday, which is generally a recovery day. So
yeah, it's not going to make full-time referees look very good, but my first day was the recovery day, which meant that I started at and game prep day, which meant I started at 10 a.m. I did big change to my day starting at 5 a.m. usually. Did my weight session with my team for the weekend, those who I was officiating with, into a bike session with them.
Because you're officiating Friday night, so it's a very low day on the Thursday leading into a game. It's almost like a captain's run.
Yeah, exactly right. So we do our weights together. We then sit on a spin bike together and watch game footage of, it could be either of the teams we're refereeing or of the last time any of us officiated together, to sort of see how each other works on the field. And we just sort of talk through things. So things like when the referees are on transition, what our different comms processes are going to be. And again, the listeners would have heard that sort of stuff last week.
So it's just your game prep for that game leading in.
Yeah. So we sort of did that and then got a massage and went home.
Tough
and
day.
It was a tough day. And then went into to Friday night's game. So, yeah, for myself, Todd and Belinda, you know, it's years of work. I've been refereeing for 15 years and they're both very similar. Years and years of work to get to this point. And it's very exciting and looking forward to the journey ahead of me.
Yeah, and we talk about the soap opera that is rugby league and how much we love it, and, you know, the highs and then the lows that we sort of go through as rugby league officials and, you know, people in rugby league. So you get that Wednesday, the contract. Thursday, you go and live the life of Riley and massages and sitting around doing not much. And then Friday, you go out to Shark Park and sort of everything sort of falls down a bit pretty early in the game, where you have a decision on the touchline that, you know, is out there and everyone sort of has seen, where, you know, Josh Adokar rising to play the ball and he puts his foot on the line and you put your touch or your flag up to indicate that he's in touch. So, you know, from the highs to the lows, you just want to sort of talk around that and then post that and how you deal with that.
Yeah. It's quite unusual in the space of a very, very short time, as you said. So I found out about midday on Wednesday that I was offered a full-time contract to about, what time was kickoff of my game? About 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it was probably at about 10 past eight, quarter past eight at night. Went from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. As you said, so I had a touchline decision, which I got horribly, embarrassingly wrong. And it was just instinct. It was a lack. Hard to sort of explain whether it's a lack of focus or being hyper-focused, in that I zeroed in on Josh's foot. When a player comes near the touchline as a touch judge, there are so many. We spoke last week actually about a player going into touch or the ball going into touch being the least of our decisions. They're actually the easiest ones to make. And I look down at Josh's foot and it goes over the touchline, and just automatic reaction, I put my flag up. And by the time I got my flag to about my shoulder height, I went, what? In my head, I thought, what the hell am I doing? And it was just, how we say, you can't unring the bell. I can't put my flag down, and we know full well that once the flag goes up, there is nothing I can do. And it wasn't a case of not knowing the law. It's a very, for referees, it's a very basic law, that one. So when a player is tackled, if they go out in being tackled, you put your flag up, they're out. If a player goes into touch on rising to their feet, it's play on.
As long as they then step back
in. As long as they step back in the field.
Yes.
Where we sort of extend that to is when once the tackle is complete, you know, you can say what is rising to their feet and that sort of stuff. But how we've always applied it is once the tackle's complete, pretty much once the vocab's been given and momentum's done in the tackle and that sort of stuff, if the player is fighting to get to their feet, it's play on.
Yeah.
As I said, I zeroed into his foot, goes over the touchline, flag goes up, and all I could hope from that point was that nothing came of it. You know, we get there's a penalty off the back of it and a change of possession, and then the team score a try and so on. So more than anything, it's just embarrassing.
Yeah.
You just feel stupid. I guess it's similar to a player who, a goal kicker who misses a kick from in front, or,
yeah,
I don't know, we spoke about Greg Inglis a couple of years ago kicking a field goal when they were down by 2 points.
Yeah,
just that embarrassment factor of going, I know I can do a job, but just you lose focus for 1 second, or you become zeroed in on a moment in play and you forget about other things.
Yeah, and it was, well, I didn't get to see the game, obviously, because I was refereeing at 6 o'clock on the same night. And, you know, when I was in the car, you know, we were driving back to the hotel, I sort of, you know, sent you a couple of text messages and you were like, oh, you know, I've made a pretty bad decision here. And then so as soon as I got back to the hotel, I give you a call, and I was shocked when you told me what it was, because I know you're someone who really prides themselves on knowing the laws of the game. And that's why, you know, I know that, you know, it wasn't that you didn't know the law, you just stuffed up.
Yeah.
You just, you know, put your flag up and realised, I've stuffed this up here. And yeah, you just spoke about having a full-time contract. I've got no doubt that, you know, the length of your career, there's going to be other moments like that, because we all had them. That's
terrific.
Just life.
Sounds like fun.
No, but it's just life of being, you know, an official that's under that much scrutiny and having all the camera angles and stuff like that. That there are going to be decisions that we make that are wrong. How did you deal with it, knowing that you knew that? And I think it was 4 minutes into the game.
Mm.
So you've got 75 minutes of an NRL game and a high-profile NRL game to get through, knowing that you had a pretty big error and that more than likely will result in you not being in first grade next week,
yeah,
but you've still got 75 minutes to go.
Yeah, that's a good question, and something that we do a bit of coaching on with younger referees through their development. I guess everyone handles things differently. And for myself, getting through the game isn't the hardest part for me, because to me, I think the only thing worse than making one bad call is making two bad calls. And the only thing worse than letting my team down by that decision is by keeping it in my head and thinking about it and continuing to potentially impact the game or impact the performances of the other referees. So as you and the touch judge. So as you said, you know, I go through that happens, and you know straight away that's something I'll not be in first grade for at least the next week. I don't want to then impact that game and have the referees or the other touch judge also not be in first grade because I've continued to impact that game. So for me, it's just compartmentalising it. And like I said, just knowing the only thing that makes this worse is making another bad decision.
Yeah.
So it just goes to the side for me, because there's so many other things happening. It's more after the game that it becomes worse,
yeah,
because you've actually got time to then think about it. I guess during the game, as you said, it's a Friday night football. All games are big, but Friday night football is a high profile game, and especially between these two teams and the history of the clashes between these teams.
Well, we've spoken about that before, about the Friday night, you're sort of leading the team at,
yeah,
Thursday, and Friday you're leading the team out. And that, you know, what you said there is a really big point, where, you know, if the Saturday and Sunday and the media's talking about Casey Badger made this poor decision, that's not the worst thing in the world for the rest of the squad.
Mm.
If you were to back it up and back it up, then it doesn't go Casey Badger, goes that team last night or,
yeah,
that game was really poorly officiated,
yes,
or, you know, the referees were hopeless.
Referees aren't up to standard.
Yeah, so that's a big part of what we do, mm, and how we really train on, you know, we call it black boxing the incident, and it's something that at lower levels of the game, sometimes you don't need to do it because you don't know if you're right or wrong,
yeah,
on things. This one was a bit different because you,
yeah,
knew straight away, because it's a, you know, it's not a decision as such.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, you might not know. But if you do know, a lot of the skill set is to be able to just put that aside. And it's exactly what you said. You just got to, for referees, if you make a bad call, we make bad calls. They're going to happen. Mm-hmm. But if you make back to back to back, that's when we start to question your ability to be out there,
yeah,
at that level.
And it's just part of being mentally tough. And it's similar to a player. If a player makes an error, the last thing they want to do is back that up with another error, and they don't want to let their teammates down, so they're going to make sure they're going to be spot on in defence, or they want to, you know, make sure that they're concentrating, going back to basics, catch pass, you know, that sort of stuff. So for me, I'm sure for all referees, especially at this level, that's just what it's about. And, yeah, so after the game, I just apologised to my team. I was thankful that nothing happened in that, nothing else affected them, because if you took that incident out of it, we officiated really well.
Yeah.
There were some really good things that came out of that game for us as a team, communication and
it was
and
a good watching it back, you know, on replay. It was a pretty good game of footy
and
as well.
And it was quite tough to officiate both on the 10 metres and in the rucks. Yeah. So we needed a good level of teamwork and team dynamics there to get through the match. Like you said, it's just part of the role of being a referee at this level. It hurts and it sucks, but that's it.
One thing you spoke about there was, when they make a mistake, the players get around them and stuff. And you often hear, and we hear a lot, they'll just go one set. So they break it down to one set at a time to get back into the grind. Some referees do things differently and some do stuff like that as well, where some referees will say, they'll break it down into sets as well. Okay, if I get through this set and get through this set, all of a sudden I've done, 60 sets and the game's finished. Or some people will break it down into time periods. Mm-hmm. Okay, if I get through the next 5 minutes, get through the next 5 minutes, and all of a sudden we're at half time or at full time. Do you have any process around that, or is it yours just get through the next decision, get through it? Because I'm a decision.
Yeah, see, I'm literally flick a switch. My thing is, it's almost like the light's on. I've made a bad decision, the light's gone off. All right, flick the light back on. Because, as I said, I know this is the third time that I've said it, the only thing that is worse than me making one bad decision is me making two bad decisions. So flick the light back on, and I don't find that I stay in that moment. But what you just said then is a real good strategy that we teach to other younger referees in breaking it down. Okay, let me just focus on the ball, or let me focus on my ruck vocab, or back asking my teammates to back down on their communication so we can just go to basics of officiating and not worry about anything fancy, or I want to referee the next 5 minutes strong and then I know I'm back in a great space, which are all it's just going to be dependent on the personality type of the referee. Like I said, for me, it's me flicking the light back on.
Yeah, and everyone, and I think, and it doesn't even break down into officiating. It breaks into lots of things, like outside, work and stuff like that, where if you can, get past that, an error or, some bad judgment, if you can get past that, after you get back into it, you sort of forget it. It just goes away.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. You get back into the grind of the game, and all of a sudden you've been in the grind, and all of a sudden you get to half time or you get to full time, you go, oh yeah, I had that.
Yeah.
So you sort of.
Sort of explain that as well is that, like you said, it was 4 minutes into the game or something, and my whole team knew that error had happened.
Everyone knew.
And at half time, one of the boys said to me, oh, like nothing had been said about it, and he just sort of walked past me in the sheds and just said, look, don't worry about that touchline decision. I said, oh, I'm not. Because in that moment, I wasn't worried about it. Because I still had a job to do.
Yeah.
And then full-time, do all my rehab after the game and all that, then get on the phone to you and then, lay in bed that night and think, oh, God, I'm an idiot.
And that's a big thing as well, being able to, even post-game, because you talk about that, how you think about it. And, I'm sure, and I was up in Townsville, so I wasn't even there to support you. But, it's a tough night. Sitting in bed, you don't get a lot of sleep. We don't get a lot of sleep anyway after games generally because you're buzzing and ears are ringing from crowd noise and stuff. But to then have that running through your mind, why did I do that? Why did I? But by next day, even though you're still upset about the decision, you just got to move on, though.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not going to spend the day wallowing around in my own self-pity.
I wouldn't let you because it would bring me down.
And that's also not my personality type either. I know the ramifications of the decision that I made, but I'm not going to make it worse by sort of moping around the house or not getting out there. I went out, watched our grandson play footy in the morning out at Wentworthville, so enjoyed watching him sort of run around and have fun, and definitely got a lot of joy out of that. Went home, did more rehab stuff, came out to the junior rep grand finals with you and just kept busy and filled in the day.
One thing I want to sort of break onto that too, you have sort of a dual role as well in the squad. So, a lot of the younger referees come through, and some of the guys that have been around for a bit will have two roles in the squad, and one will be touch judging and refereeing. You then had to Sunday go out and back up and referee a Canterbury Cup, New South Wales Cup game, which was a two-ref game, which was on TV as well. So you sort of put yourself under that scrutiny again pretty much two days later and then have to go out there and do a job there. So if you're still dwelling on, what was Friday night, that could quite easily impact your performance on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And But Bernie Sutton gave me a buzz on Saturday just to sort of check in and see how I was doing, which was, you know, good just to have that chat with your coach. And that's something that he brought up as well, just saying, well, you know, it's almost like the benefit that you've got is that you've got another game to get into.
Yeah.
So you actually have to push the other thing aside and get it out there and perform, because he knows my goals just like any other referee at this level has the goals of refereeing first grade. So I need to get out there on Sunday. And like you said, especially in a TV game, you know, more camera angles and more scrutiny on it. I need to get out there and do a good job to sort of show, well, I still have this skill set. And I guess that's the thing with this sort of decision is that it's not a form issue.
Yeah, we spoke about that.
We sort of spoke about that with your one, yeah. I know my game's not broken. I know it's not like I've got to go back to reserve grade and fix a bunch of things or
And that long process to get back because you have to get back into form. It's a little bit different.
I just had a brain explosion. Something happened. It's never happened before, and you know that type of thing. And I'm not concerned that I don't have the ability at this level.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what makes it easier to deal with as well.
And I'll sort of finish off on it now, but I know another thing is you've got a core group of people inside footy and outside of footy that you sort of bounce off a bit as well. How important was that for you to have the guys, you know, the guys that are inside footy know it and understand it and felt it so they can help you, but you've also got that core group of girls, you know, from school and stuff that you know, will make sure that you're grounded all the time.
Yeah.
And it's important to have both inside and outside and how that sort of made it much easier for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, there's members of the squad who like, you know, contact you and, you know, check in, make sure you're all right. And then also just the ones who know exactly what you're going through. I said anyone who's done, you know, a certain amount of games in the NRL has had one of these moments. You don't go through you don't have a career and not have one of these moments. So they can empathise with that and sort of, you know, have that little chat.
Some of us have more than one, so.
Well, mate, I would trade that to do the 300-plus games that you've done.
Yeah.
And that's just part of having that career. So it's good to have that understanding within the group. And then, as you said, to have friends outside of football, you know, who you can go and have dinner with or have a chat with and who both support your journey but also have the ability to talk about other ridiculous things that have nothing to do with rugby league. And, you know, we went out for dinner with them on Sunday night and, you know, had a big laugh and ate lots of food. And
didn't even talk about footy.
Didn't mention
which is rare
football.
For us not to talk football.
you know, so it's definitely good to have those girls there, as you said, been friends with for years. And you hear footballers and other athletes talk about this a lot, the importance of having, you know, people within the space of whatever sport you're in to bounce off, but to also have things away from that space so that you don't get caught up in the bubble, you know, that you've got people to go and talk about their kids, their lives, their jobs, their extracurricular activities, you know, and reminisce on old times and, you know, all the inside jokes that you have. And that definitely helps you get by. And, yeah, this is stuff that we try and teach our younger referees, because especially those refereeing at district level, like I've got the support here at the NRL,
yeah.
And it's much as it's a public thing, you know, and that's a different scrutiny to deal with. Feeling like you're alone at a grassroots level, like you don't have anyone there to protect you, and you know, no one cares what you're doing, and you're out in the cold, out in the rain. You might be getting $50 for a game or something, you know. To me, I look at that and go, well, that's a lot tougher, and yeah, we need to provide them with ways of dealing with that as well.
Yeah, I agree, because the pressures on us are higher at our level because of the scrutiny around that, but there's still the same pressure of the guys running around in Parkville, because they also, you know, they're looking forward to refereeing grand finals and getting better games and getting into squads and stuff like that. So they need to make sure that they've got a support system around them when that doesn't go to plan, you know what I mean? You've always got to make sure that you've got someone that you can lean on when, you know, what you think should be happening isn't happening, or where you should be heading isn't heading. So you've got to make sure you've always got someone around to have a chat to and you know, help out when you think you need it.
Yeah, that's right. So with that was one of those obscure sort of rulings. We just want to bring up two real quick ones just because we've got stories to tell about them. We sort of think where we've got time, we'll let the listeners know a little bit about a couple of odd rules like that touchline one. You had a story about what happens when the boar bursts.
Yes, I had a game at the Sydney Showground where Bulldogs used to play out of, it's now spotless stadium or in Olympic Park. And I remember a reserve grade game, and we went out for the kickoff, and as the ball was kicked off, it burst from the original kickoff of the game. And sort of everyone's standing around going, what do we do? And as a referee coming through, you do that many rules quizzes, and in every one you do, it says something about the ball burst, and you've never seen it happen and never think it's going to happen. Well, I had it happen in a reserve grade game, and I actually went back and kicked the ball off again because I just thought the fairest thing to do here is to do that.
But what is the technical rule the ball bursts, whether it's at the kickoff or just in the run of play?
Well, funny you say that. So after the game had finished, my match day coach, who was doing the assessment of my game, said to me, do you know what the rule is for when the ball bursts? And I said, yes. I said, the team to last touched or last be in possession of the ball has a scrum feed. In this case, I thought, well, it's unfair that the team kicking off,
so they're the last one to have
last
touched
or touch the ball, would get the scrum feed at halfway line when they should have been defending. So I said, to me, the fairest way was just to repack the
common sense,
re-kick the ball. To which he said, I'm glad you did that, but I'm glad you knew the rule as well.
We
talk about that. And you had one as well where you're refereeing a game and, the obscurity of what happens if the referee blows the whistle by mistake.
So it's noted as the referee accidentally blows the whistle. So I sort of say it's a bit different because I purposely blew the whistle, but I shouldn't have. So a player, I was refereeing at Birchgrove Oval.
It was.
It's the only game that I've ever refereed there. I was refereeing a Harold Matthews game. Would have been in 2008. Yeah. So it was my second year in the junior rep squad. And a player ran out, like had their foot on the touchline, and I'm watching the play. So as play's going down, I see him step on the touchline. So he's out. So I blow my whistle. And I stop running and I look, and the touch judge...
He's still going,
running downfield, doesn't put his flag up. I'm like, and on video, like, the player was out. Like,
you're going to make sure everyone knows you were right?
I was right, but technically, the touch judge is the sole judge of
even if someone lands up in the grandstand, if the touch judge says they're not out?
They're not out, yeah. So because the touch judge doesn't put their flag up, play continued downfield, then I had to stop play. I had to come back. I packed a scrum. Referee accidentally blows the whistle, and the scrum feed goes to whoever last touched the ball. Same as the ball bursting.
Yeah.
So thankfully,
the right team.
That's why it sort of helped that I just sort of said to the player, look, accidentally blew the whistle, you'll get the scrum feedback. And I think it was early in the tackle count as well, so luckily it didn't have too much of an impact on the game. But there's two obscure rules for the listeners, the ball bursting and the referee accidentally blowing the whistle. I don't think we've ever seen it at the NRL level, but if either of them did happen, a scrum would be packed, and the team who last touched the ball, who last played at the ball, would have the loose head and feed.
And there's a bit of a difference between ball bursting and the ball just being a bit flat, where we just change the ball.
Just change the ball,
which happens quite often.
Yeah. All right. So plenty to talk about this week. So what's the rest of your week look like? Where are you up to this weekend?
Well, I'm fortunate enough this weekend to be involved in what is the first ever magic round of the NRL up in Brisbane, where, as everyone would know, that all the games are played over the weekend at the same stadium. So, I'm running around out there on Saturday with the Warriors-Dragons game. So, really looking forward to being up there and being part of what is something that hopefully going forward will be a great weekend in rugby league.
Yeah, it's a great initiative by the NRL.
And just before I finish, I just want to thank you for that last little bit that we had there. It's quite a great insight into, it's easy to talk about stuff when you're going well, but when you're battling a little bit, and to get it out there and hopefully that helps someone else down the track, I really, I'm sure people really appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, it's all part of the journey.
What about you, your weekend?
I've got no idea. I'll watch probably all 8 of the NRL games, go out and watch Cooper play footy again at Wentworthville or wherever he's playing, and don't know. I'll see what it holds. So, as always, we'd like to get our listeners to join our Facebook and Instagram pages. Our Facebook page is NRL Officiating, and the Instagram handle is at NRL Officiating. So give us a follow to keep up to date with what's been happening in the world of rugby league officials across the country, from under sixes through to the NRL. And if you are interested in becoming a referee, please visit refrugbyleague.com. So I hope everyone enjoys Magic Round this weekend. It's sure to be something different. And thank you for listening to Ref's Roundup.
Bye.